where do we go from here? What happens now? And I think it's a couple things you got to look at. First of all, we have to realize that if Bush won, if Kerry won, it would have made a bit of difference to those who are on the ground in Iraq now, the Iraqi civilians and the American and British and the rest of the coalition troops. Not a thing would have changed. Kerry's plan was basically, I heard it said before, Bush light. He wanted to send more troops in, but he wanted to pull out the American troops and send more international troops in, which would have meant, to me, it would mean he would end up sending more American troops in. Because what world leader in their right mind right now, after seeing the mess we have made, would send his own citizens into that country? None. Which means Kerry would have ended up having to send more of our own troops in there to do what he planned. And there, let me tell you something right now, there are no more troops. Those in the military right now are incredibly overextended. The reserves have already hit their maximum amount of deployments in most units. Contractually and by law, most National Guard and Reserve units cannot be deployed anymore. So they've got to figure out something. And I'm afraid the only thing they can do at this point is going to be the draft. Before the election, there was a vote on a draft bill. I'm going to talk about that a little bit. The bill that came up was written by Charles Rangel, representative from Harlem, Korean War veteran, member of Veterans for Peace, who himself was drafted and fought in the Korean War and saw horrible combat there. If you talk to him, he said he put that bill forward and he did not want it to pass. His whole point of putting that bill forward was to highlight the poverty draft, because the bill he put forward called for mandatory term of service for every man and woman between 18 and 25, 2 years mandatory service no matter what. And that's the bill they called for. He voted against his own bill. But this is the bill the Republicans chose to talk about. They did not choose to talk about the other two draft bills that were also sitting in committee, both of which were proposed by Republicans. The first called for a lottery system, which is the same thing they were doing back in Vietnam, Korea, World War II, and everything else. The second one, and this is the dangerous one, this is what you need to go back to your schools and talk about, called for a skill selective draft. No lottery, no everybody serve. They pick and choose who serves. That means when you hit 18, and I think every year after that, you would have to submit a report stating what skills you possess. And then they pick and choose who they want to bring in. So if they need computer operators, they're going to go after computer majors. If they, if they need motor T people, they're going to call up mechanics and truck drivers. And if they need more grunts and ground pounders, they're going to call up the uneducated, unskilled workers from the lower middle class. That's what they're looking at. So just want to throw that out there. Also, there was another horrible thing about this election. One thing I think everyone here realizes about the media right now is that repetition is true. Am I right? With the American public and what they see on the news, repetition is true. Now, you had two main candidates, Bush and Kerry, both calling for a continued occupation of Iraq, which meant no one was talking about withdrawal in the media. No one got any airplay talking about withdrawal, which meant for the past year, all the American public has heard is we need to stay and finish the job. Two different opinions on how we finish the job, but we need to stay, which means we have an uphill battle right now talking about immediate withdrawal, because they don't know anything about it in the public. They think the truth is that we need to stay and finish the job. Our job right now is to make them understand that the Iraqis can finish the job themselves. We also need to make them understand, but by saying that, we are not abandoning the people of Iraq. What we need to do is we need to stand by them in their time of need, but not with the military. And not with Halliburton, not with Bechtel, not with Kellogg, Brown, and Root. That's right. We need to work with them and give them every single bit of financial material assistance they need to rebuild their country, because they can do it themselves. They've proven it in the past. If you look at Iraq in the past, before Saddam Hussein ruined it, it was the most advanced country in the Middle East. It was a secular country. It was an advanced country. They've shown they can do it, and we need to give them that opportunity again. Now, here's where I get my little, fantasy world. What I think we need to do to win the quote-unquote war on terror is not occupy and destroy every country we feel is harboring terrorists or doing terrorist things. What we need to do is basically do what we did with the Marshall Plan, except expand it to the rest of the world. help those countries rebuild, not for our profit, but for their profit and their general well-being. If the rest of the world is living at standards that we have, we're not busy trying to oppress them and steal their natural resources, there would be no terrorism. That's something we need to understand, and that's something we need to let this rest of the country know. We need to clue them in on the real history about what's actually been going on around the world. And when they start understanding that, they'll see the rest of this in context and understand what we need to do. Now, switching gears from that, talking again about the war in Iraq. You know, what's going on right now is not what the news is telling people. The reality on the ground is so much different than what's being told in the news. It makes me sick watching the news some days. After being there, being on the ground, seeing the reality, talking every single day to other people who have been there and just come back, or guys who are still there right now, it's unbelievable the difference. And the first thing I think everyone here understands, but we need to keep saying it, is that who we are fighting in Iraq is not terrorists. They are not, you know, all these Islamic militants coming in from Syria, Jordan, you know, Libya. Even though there are probably some coming in from there, you know, from Egypt, all these countries, you know, there are some of them there. They're the ones responsible for the suicide attack and the suicide bombings mostly. But the average day-to-day fighting, those who are really taking a toll on our forces over there, are the average Iraqi citizens. They are occupied, and they want their freedom back, and I believe they have every single right to have it. This is something that those on the ground understand. They're the ones shooting at them. They're the ones getting shot at. They see who they're shooting at. They know what's going on. We've got a member who's stationed outside of Samarra right now with a armored recon unit. And he told me a story where one night they got hit by an ambush. Perfect L-shaped ambush. So he knew it was the Iraqis. They were using good military tactics. So they got hit. You know, they returned fire. They got out of there. And the next morning, he saw a funeral procession traveling through the city. And when he looked at the body they were carrying, he recognized it. It was somebody who had been working a shop for the last 3 months he'd been in there. This is not somebody streaming over the border, something. This was an average citizen. For all he knew, in a raid they had done the day before, in a bombing the day before, they had killed his wife, his brother, his children, one of his friends. That's what's happening over there. That is what's driving the resistance. A 500-pound bomb, as accurate as it might be, is still a 500-pound bomb. It is going to level every single thing in the nearby vicinity, including innocent women and children, including people who want nothing to do with this war except to live their lives, take care of their families, and carry on the exact same thing people here in the U.S. want. And another thing, those who are serving over there, like I said, they understand what's going on. You talk to them. And if they're for the war or against the war, they will tell you to a man that if somebody was doing to us what we were doing to the people of Iraq, we would be fighting just as hard, if not harder. So we've got to make people understand what's going on. We've got to make them realize what this war really means. And that means we've got to break past the news. We have to go past what the news is telling us, because it just like I said before, it makes me sick watching the news. And when they talk about the war, they use big impersonal numbers and this clean analytical discussion of what's going on. When somebody's talking about what's going on in Fallujah, it's not somebody standing there dodging bullets and ducking behind a tank. It's somebody sitting in a Pentagon briefing room or a briefing room in the green zone. And you wouldn't even know they're anywhere near the fight. They don't know anything about the fight. They're just repeating what's been told to them by whatever Pentagon official or whatever armchair general they had on who retired 5 years ago. Right. They are not getting the personal stories. If people heard the personal stories and really understood and heard those, this war would be over in a second. And that's what we've got to do. We've got to get those voices heard. Voices like mine, the other member of Iraq Veterans Against War, military families speak out. Their voices need to be heard. Because, I mean, let's just give you a couple examples of what you hear on the news and what's the reality. You know, a couple months ago on the news where I live in Philadelphia, there was a report. Today in Iraq, the first Pennsylvania National Guardman was killed in action in Iraq since World War II. He was killed near Baghdad by a roadside bomb. End of story. That's the news. Real story, personal story. Celeste Zapala had an army captain show up at her doorstep and just knocked and said, when she came and said, "Are you sure we're Baker's mother?" And she looked at him weird and she said, "Are you sure we're Baker's mother?" And when she realized what he was there to tell her, she fell on the ground and just started screaming for a half hour. That's what we're not hearing in the news. You hear in the news during the invasion period, a United States Marine was killed by a sniper outside of Nazaria. End of story. Talk to Rob Serra, who watched his friend bleed to death in front of him after being shot by a sniper, and realizing that his life could have been saved if he had been properly equipped, because he only had one ballistic plate. His chest was protected, but his back wasn't. He got shot in the back. And Rob had to watch him bleed to death because they couldn't get to him because they were still taking fire. That's what we're not hearing. If we heard those personal stories in the news, this war would be over in a second. But they don't want us to hear that because they know that will end this war. That is what we've got to do. We've got to take out to the streets and make sure these voices are heard. That is the only way we'll end this war. That is what will turn the people against the war. And, you know, just the last thing I want to say is that people, you know, people are down. You know, I heard it called post-election depression or whatever they're calling it now. How do we get people re-energized? How do we get them back into the streets? And I say because there's a sense of urgency right now. People are dying. Iraqi Americans, British, Italians, all of them. They are dying as we speak. Right now, as I speak, bombs are dropping in Fallujah. I think right now over a dozen Marines have died in that assault and countless Iraqis. Because the first thing we did was take over the hospital so that accurate civilian death counts did not come out. And now they're going after Mosul. Because as soon as we attacked Fallujah, everybody left Fallujah and went to another city, which is the right thing to do in a guerrilla war. You know, and they act dumbfounded when they do things like that. That's proper tactics. The Iraqis have been fighting ever since the Iran-Iraq war. These people are hardened fighters. They know what they're doing. They're not going to stand there and get slaughtered. They're going to up and move and blend in with the population and go to the next town. And that's going to continue happening. But going back to his saying, there's a sense of urgency about that. And that is what we have to carry through. We have to let people know that there are bombs dropping, that people are dying. The next one that dies might be their neighbor, might be their friend from high school. That's what we need to let them know, and that is what's going to get people re-energized, to get them back out on the streets. You know, just one last thing is, this is what I told the other members of Iraq Veterans Against the War after the election. I said, yeah, it sucks that Kerry lost. You know, it's going to be harder on some fronts, you know, like Roe versus Wade and things like that. But this is our goal now. We have to hit Bush, and we have to hit Bush so hard that he's going to wish he was never elected. And if we go up to the streets and we continue this fight, we will make him realize that his place in the history books will be so black, he'll be remembered forever as the worst president ever. Thank you.